So there is an observation of surface dynamos, and so this work has been done in collaboration with Fausto Cattaneo at UFC, and also for a while there was Alexander Vogler from the MPI Fuel Aeronomy in Lindau, Germany. He's a student of Manfred Schüssler. And I've been asked by the organizer to do an introduction, which was pretty nice. But then I think this morning we have seen a lot of introduction about dynamos and things, so I'm going to go fast about them. And I'm going to spend most of my time on theoretical results and then what kind of challenges there is for people doing theory or observation about that subject. So when you look at the sun, at the magnetogram of the sun from the Mount Wilson here, blue and red indicates different polarities, you see easily large-scale magnetic features that we heard about this morning. And these active regions have a lifetime of about a month, and their size is about 50,000 kilometers. Then there is bigger region called unipolar area, which lives for about a year. And these regions tend to appear at the preferred latitude, and they have organized polarities. We heard about the butterfly diagram this morning. And the properties vary with the solar cycle, which is about 22 years. And an important thing about all these objects is their size in general is bigger than the Rossby radius. Or says in another way, they feel the rotation of the sun. So the Coriolis force is important for this object. And they're believed to be the manifestation of a solar dynamo, which is deeply seated in the convection zone. And with this dynamo, for this dynamo mechanism to work, an important ingredient is rotation, because rotation breaks the spherical symmetry, and therefore you have transport of angular momentum, and you get differential rotation. It also breaks the reflectional symmetry, and so you get helicity. And if you have helicity, you can have inverse cascade, and you can have organization of your magnetic field on large scale. So you can create magnetic field on small scale and then pump this magnetic energy to larger scales. But now if you look at this in more detail, apart from these guys here, which are organized around the mean latitude, you see about everywhere these little dots that Tom Berger was speaking about right now. And so we would call that small scale magnetic features. And as he said, you see them in general organized around mesogranular scale, supergranular scale, and their lifetime inside these mesogranular scales, you can have magnetic elements which have a lifetime of just one turnover time or even smaller. And if you try to find out what's their size, you find that you find them up to the limit of resolution of the telescope, which nowadays is about 0.2 arcseconds. The properties of these magnetic fields, they don't have a preferred latitude. You found them about everywhere on the sun. And then you have mixed polarities, which means that if you measure the magnetic flux, for example, in the quiet sun, like we heard this morning, well, it would not change with the activity cycle. And also, if you don't have an angular resolution which is small enough to resolve the structure, you might cancel positive and negative feature. And these features are smaller than the Rossby radius, so dynamically they don't feel so much the rotation of the sun. And there is several possibilities about how to explain their origins. One simple idea would be that they're just the byproduct of this deeply seated solar dynamo, which means that when you have a big bunch of magnetic field rising through the convection zone to give rise to an active region, there's some noise produced with this phenomena. And the noise is then reprocessed, it's a magnetic noise basically, and you see it here. Well, another thing which can happen is also that this field is generated locally, because these granular flows these convective flows are the dynamo. And some hints about that is you have naturally scales that fits together. You have granules about 1,000 kilometers on the border of them, and they vary with about, you know, time scale for minute. And you find inner network field which varies with these kind of time scales, and they are located along the border of these guys. And then you have super granules, and you also find a network of magnetic field. So in this talk, I'm just gonna explore this possibility number two, that which means that the magnetic field will be created locally, or part of it. Of course, in the Sun, you would expect that you will have a mix of these two processes. So for a simple dynamo process, you need, as the ingredient, you need a highly conducting plasma, because if it's highly conducting, then the magnetic field lines are frozen in the field, so in the plasma. So if you move the plasma, you move the field line with it. And then if the flow is chaotic, then any pair of points are going to separate at an exponential rate. And so if you put a seed field, it's going to be deformed at an exponential rate. And then you begin, so if you have these conditions satisfied, then you have the competition between two exponentially growing processes. One, which is the stretching of the field lines, which gives you magnetic amplification. And also, because you're doing this, you're increasing gradients of the magnetic field. And when you pull a magnetic field line, at some point you're going to twist it and pack it in another way. So the twisting and packing increase also the diffusion. So you have magnetic amplification and magnetic diffusion. And these are two exponentially growing processes. And if the amplification wins, you have a dynamo. If not, you don't. And in 1986, there was an important paper by Weinstein and Kichatinov. And since then, there's this idea that any turbulent chaotic flow is very likely to be a dynamo. Also, I don't know. I didn't read this one, so.
This Weinstein Kichatinov paper was actually the synicity. If I'm not mistaken, that one was novel because it was with synicity. It was a presumptive model with synicity, essentially. So I think you want to try to rather present it.
I mixed up two references?
Yeah.
Maybe. But basically, the idea here is that in the literature, if you look through the literature, there is everywhere this idea that if you're a turbulent flow, you're very likely to have a dynamo. And so if you go now to the Sun, you have several hints towards that. For example, the solar plasma is highly conducting, and the convective flow expected to be turbulent. So close to the surface, if you do a bold estimate, you can find out that the magnetic Reynolds number is about 10 to the 6, 10 to the 5, and eta over nu, the magnetic diffusivity divided by the viscosity, is 10 to the 7, so the Reynolds number is even much bigger. And then you also have the correspondence that I spoke about before between granules and inner network field, supergranular network field. So these hints leaded several papers in the literature which dealt with the fact that part of the surface magnetic field could be generated locally by the convective flow. I began with Meneguzzi and Puket. They did a simulation in 1989, a direct simulation. They basically took a box with a Business fluid inside. They drove it and they obtained a certain amount of generation of magnetic field. And then you have all these different persons here. Now I'm going to pass rapidly over things that we have done last year and the year before. And then I'm going to go to some challenging problem that we're dealing with now. So we've done also several simulations. And we do them using a Cartesian box with an aspect ratio of 10 by 10 by 1. And the resolution is 5 foot square. Times 97. Boundary condition are constant temperature on the top and bottom, and they are stress free. And in the horizontal direction, we have a periodic boundary condition. And we put inside a Boussinesq fluid, so we have no compressibility, no ionization, no relative cooling. And so it's basically an incompressible simulation. But because of that, we can go to very high Reynolds number magnetic and kinematic, and we get chaotic flows. These are the equations we are solving: energy, induction, momentum equation and induction equation. And here I have put the result for several simulations. This one is the one that was published by Fausto in 1999. And so here in this box, you see the magnetic intensity of the intensity of the magnetic field. So where it's transparent, it's a weak magnetic field. When it's opaque, it's a strong magnetic field. And also the red color is strong, the blue color is weaker. Here you see the temperature fluctuation at the top of this box, and you see the vertical component of the magnetic field in the top of on this plane here. And this case that you are seeing here is for this Rayleigh number, this size, and the Reynolds number is 200, magnetic Reynolds number is 1000. And what you find is that you get an efficient dynamo. You get e-folding time, which is about 4.5 turnover time, and you get 20% of magnetic volume average magnetic energy as compared to the volume average kinetic energy. Then if you try to find out what's the lower limit for Rm to get a dynamo, you can lower the Rayleigh number, and I did that in a smaller box, and I found that when you reach about 600, then you don't get a dynamo. Now I'm just going to remember some results that we found about the structure of the magnetic field that you get in these simulations. This is a probability distribution function of the magnetic intensity near the top of the box, in the basically in the thermal boundary layer of the box. And the gray region here means magnetic field which are below equipartition. And the first important thing about the PDF is that it's not Gaussian. So the generation of magnetic field is not a random process. And velocities, well, if you do the same for velocity, you would find a Gaussian curve. And you see that the most probable magnetic intensities are the smallest one, which means that the flow is able to push out of the granules the magnetic field. So most of the volume has very weak magnetic field. But you have also strong fluctuation of strong magnetic field on the side. And if you look for the filling factor of the fluctuation which are bigger than twice the equipartition, you find about 0.3%. And another thing that you find is you calculate the mean of the magnetic field, you find a flux density which is about a quarter of equipartition. And you find flux everywhere in this box. Finally, the PDF is symmetric, which means basically you have mixed polarities. You don't have one polarity which is more important than the other one. And if you look at the structure of the strong magnetic features, so here what I'm representing is BZ, where it's bigger than twice the equipartition, and you have 10 over turning time. And if I'm putting this, it's just because if you look here, you see that most of the feature, it traveled towards this point. And so if you were to look at this with a telescope with a low resolution, you would find that here you have always magnetic field. But they're all different structure which are being traveling here. It's not a stable structure which is staying here. There's a downflow which is long-lived, but the life of each of the individual magnetic features is short compared to this downflow. So now there is several related observations. We heard a lot about them just before, so I'm just going to remember. So, for example, the first one, I just learned about it this morning. This paper by Harvey and White, they found there is magnetic flux in the quiet sun, and it doesn't vary with the solar cycle. So that's an indication that the first idea that this magnetic field would be due to the rest of the rise of active region is difficult. It doesn't really work with this, because then why do you find magnetic field also when you don't have active region rising? You have a high-resolution G-band observation by Tom Berger and Teitel, and as he explained, they find a time scale of magnetic flux evolution in plage of about 6 to 8 minutes, and the morphological changes on time scale short as 100 seconds. And there's also Lin and Rimele. They also find mixed polarities, small scale structures, and you have MDIs, Soho, and the Hanley effect. They find there's about between 5 and 15 Gauss randomly everywhere on the sun, which also goes into the sense that there is a surface dynamo. And finally, the MISMA model. So this paper, yeah. So if they have that in the paper, what does it mean? I don't know. Is it wrong?
I mean, it may be true, but
yeah,
it can't be distinguished.
For me, it's very difficult to understand anyway.
It's true, but plus minus can be guessed.
Uh-huh. Oh,
I'm criticizing the work, I'm just saying.
No, it's good, because the major problem for a person like me when we read these papers is that to understand them is so, it's very difficult. So now I would like to go through a few challenges that there is for the theory. First, there is a problem that when you have this box, you put a seed field, you get magnetic energy amplification, and at some point it saturates. And why it saturates is this feeling that, well, the magnetic field at some point begins to have a feedback on the flow, and that's why it saturates. But if you try to understand it in detail, it's a very difficult problem, and there's not a clear answer by now. There was a paper by Catano, Hughes, and Kim in 96, where they used a forcing of this form here, which is basically four cells which are rotating and moving together, and they neglected the inertia. So basically you have flows like this and spiral going out like this, and then they measured they put a seed field, and the seed field is being amplified, and then it saturates. And so they said, well, what's the difference between the flow at the beginning, which is able to amplify the magnetic field, and the flow when it has saturated, that's not amplifying the magnetic field anymore? And in this case, they found out that what happened to the flow is that at the beginning it's chaotic, and at the end it's no more chaotic, or a lot of these chaotic regions have disappeared. And the way they measured that, they measured the Lyapunov exponent, the finite time Lyapunov exponent, which basically gives you the exponent at which you're stretching these two points. And so this plot here gives you the finite Lyapunov exponent at the beginning of the kinematic phase. And you see that all these regions are chaotic, and this one are not. And this is the same for once it has saturated, and you see that chaotic region has almost disappeared. So based on this paper, I thought, well, let's do the same for the full 3D numerical simulation. So I took the simulation before I put the seed field, and the simulation once the magnetic energy has saturated. And what I did, I wrote a particle tracer for a parallel machine. I put 128 squared particle in the box, and I let them go, and then I measured the finite time Lyapunov exponent. And what you find is, in dashed here, you have the three Lyapunov exponent. You have three directions, basically, before you put the magnetic field, and then this is once it has saturated. And as you see, you still have a very healthy chaotic flow and stretching flow once it has saturated. So in this case, yes? So in this case, the answer is not so clear. Another point about the saturation is that if you look at the PDF of the magnetic intensity, and you do it, this is the magnetic intensity now in the full 3D numerical simulation. So here you have the kinematic phase, and this is nonlinear, then it's saturated. If you look at it here and here, you have these two curves. And you see that at the end of the kinematic phase, you already have the strong magnetic features. The thing that happens in between the two is that you're packing more magnetic energy in these equipartition is about 200, so you're packing around equipartition magnetic field into the box. And the feeling that we get is that saturation has to do with the fact that there may be a limited space. In a given flow, there's a limited space where you can put magnetic field. And so once you fill up this space, then you have saturated. I'm going to come back on to this idea a bit later. So another problem with these models that I showed before is that nu over eta is 5, which means that the viscous boundary layer are bigger than the magnetic boundary layers. And that in the sun, you have the contrary. You have nu much smaller than eta. So the question is, do you still get a dynamo when you go to this regime? And I did that too. So again, here the first line is the paper by Fausto in 99, and it is this column here. And then I did a case where all the parameters are the same magnitude, nu, kappa, and eta. You get this. And then this one, when you have the smaller scale is the viscous dissipation scale. Then you have the magnetic dissipation scale, and the biggest one is the temperature dissipation scale. And I found a dynamo in these three cases. But the interesting thing is that when I tried to go to this last case without changing the Prandtl number, I let the Prandtl number to 1, then I didn't get dynamos. And what happened in this case was that without having the largest, the temperature diffusion scale larger than the other one, was meaning that my driving force has had no large scale. And not having a large scale in the driving force means that I didn't have any scale where I could pack the magnetic field that I would generate. So the magnetic field was generated and destroyed right away. It never went above 10 to the minus 6 or something like that. I'm just showing that rapidly. We can speak about it later because I have just, I think, like 5 minutes or 2 minutes now. So another thing that we began with these folks in Germany, we have been adding radiative cooling and doing a compressible simulation. And this is still in progress. We've been able to get a dynamo. And this is the parameter where we are running right now. And I'm not going to say, just to say that in a few months you're going to hear about us. And another thing here about the challenges. So you have the saturation of the dynamic process should be understood. Then more realistic modeling. And one of the things you should check out is the poster by Norgren and Stein outside there. They have a very neat idea about how to pack many to clear the bottom of the convection in a very natural way. And other challenges is that you have small-scale dynamos, large-scale theories, but there's nobody trying to put the two together. And I think by now would be a good idea to begin to try to do that. The difficulty is that you have an enormous range of spatial and temporal scale. And also, we should do some more direct comparison with observation. And with about the observation, one of the problems is that you're limited by the resolution. And the only thing I want to say about that is that a way to study what you're losing is when you have limited resolution is to use numerical simulation. Because it can give you some insight. For example, here, this is our numerical simulation. And if we assume that a granule is about 1,000 kilometers, then you pass a filter of 120 kilometer width at a Gaussian filter, and this is what you see. And if you measure, the most interesting thing perhaps is this, if you measure what you lose in your flux density. So if you have your size of the resolution element with the one that you're using to do the magnetogram, and here's the magnetic flux density. So if you are at 1, here you have full resolution in our simulation. And you see that if we go to about 1 arc second, you have lost basically, you're only left with 10% of the actual flux. So that's something to keep in mind. And studies like this you can do routinely by now using numerical simulation and the normal tools that you use to invert your data, things like that.
I have to object a little bit to the use of the word flux here, as though we're talking about a flux that's come from somewhere beneath and sticking up to the photosphere. What you really have, and what you're showing, is fields that are scrambled. If you were showing, mm-hmm. instead of BZ, if you were showing a vector field, mm-hmm. the stringy rubber bands that you're really generating in this.
Yeah.
Number one, that would be interesting for observers. Number two, it would incline you not to talk about flux. So if, you know, we usually talk about flux in active regions, 10 to 22 Maxwells in an active region. Well, if you're passing a single field line in and out of the photosphere a lot of different times, it doesn't really constitute flux in the same sense.
Yes, but that's why I put this diagram. If you are able to resolve up to the diffusion scale of the magnetic field, then you will not have that. You could actually say, what's the magnetic field there and there and there? And so right now you're not able to do this. So by understanding or testing using this kind of technique, you can know what you're losing or what you're not. You can all, and I use the magnetic flux because it's what observer in general do. So that's why I was putting this example. And I think another thing for observation is that the resolution along the line of sight, if you calculate what's the diffusion scale of magnetic field, you find out it could be like 10 kilometers, something like that. And the mean free path of a photon is about 100 kilometers. So there's some work to do in that. No. I'm seeing about the observation. I'm seeing about observing this feature, which means that one photon goes, one mean free path might have several structures within itself. And also, in the simulation, you get easily the probability distribution functions. And so instead of using two component model to invert the data, why not trying to use distribution functions of the magnetic field? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then if it's like that, then you don't need to do, then you don't need to worry about this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And with this, I would like just to conclude. So these are about avenues that I think are kind of interesting right now.
You put the finger yourself on the crucial point here, namely the saturation.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's very hard to understand if the solar turbulent field should saturate at such a low level as it actually has. In this case, you get a saturation at 20% of the
of kinetic the energy,
condition, which would be 100 to 200 gauss.
Yeah.
And here that's not the case in the sun. So, could you think of any other method that would make it saturate at the level that it probably has? I mean, you could also argue that a lot of it is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But if enough was comparable to the energy in a competition, it would also disturb the energy transport processes. So I think common sense says that it's not of the order of a fair fraction of the competition, but much, much lower.
Yeah. Yeah. So the interesting thing is that when I was with eta over nu in the wrong way, with phi.
But that would then defeat your explanation of saturation, because that depended on the volume factor. And you would be able to use that factor at 1%. So are you sure you
still have it. You still have it, and that's where the Prandtl number was important. Because when I went to lower magnetic Prandtl number, suddenly I lost my large structure of the cells, convective cells.
Yes.
But then, when
actually
I...
this corresponds to reducing scale. And since the Reynolds number in reality is so much higher, that loss of scale would not be important in real case.
Well, in these cases, which are the one I can analyze, it seemed to what was happening is that you need a scale where you generate and diffuse, and another scale when you can store or like keep it for a certain amount of time before it's being diffused. And so I lost that when I was going to a Prandtl number one and lower.
The range of scales is not sufficient.
Yeah.
But in reality, the range of scale is much, much larger. Even here, it would be sufficient.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't think the saturation problem exists in subsets of the sun. And the reason is because, if you look at the picture, magnetic field concentrates at small scales. They say roughly the boundaries of cells. So the floor has larger scale. On a large scale, it has very weak field, which doesn't hit. Where the field is large, always the partition, it has no room to it. In that sense, this results in very nice safety calculations. You don't need to care much about the world. Right?
Well, it's just that I would like to understand the process.
You see the process.
Yeah, but I would like to...
so small quantity compared to cells.
Yeah.
Only
You mentioned this Rossby radius. Suppose you were able to have a simulation of the real thing, of the whole thing. Then, of course, you would go from very large scale, small Lake numbers, to the very large Lake numbers, small scale. What do you think would happen in the spectrum at the Rossby radius? Would there be anything new, or would it be just the same thing as we have for the Rossby?
No, I think that when you go to scale which are larger than the Rossby radius, then something else must happen into the because first of all you get inverse cascade, a possibility of having inverse cascades, which you don't have below that because you basically don't feel the rotation. And I think that's the major problem is to put these two views together, because there is this idea that you could get a full dynamo by just having transport of helicity and instead of having alpha effect, and then you could store magnetic field like in your you should really check out his it's a very nice idea that they just got there, the poster they have on there. you could store magnetic field in the way that they do. And so I don't know, that's like total open question. I think it's very interesting.
Well, one more and then we can break for coffee.
In the simulation where you have a box which has no stable region on the top, so where there is no radiative cooling or some region with constant temperature, basically we have the top boundary forces the magnetic field to be vertical, so you cannot have bipolar. Now, in this case, there is no flux which is bring into the box by bipolar region. Everything is being created just by the turbulent flow. That's why it's called local generation of magnetic field.
You have one wicked short question, Mark?
I was going to say that, you know, also there's a pressure between the
Yeah.
So let's thank both of you.